I'm here with writer-director Danny Madden and producer Jim Cummings, whose new film Beast Beast is now available on demand. Welcome, guys. How are you doing?
Great. Well, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's. I'm very excited to talk about this movie. I want to talk about the film's origin, which feels a bit unconventional. Can you tell me how you got to a multi-person narrative centered around social media and gun violence from a short film about bullying?
Well, I mean, the short film was about a girl in high school who was dealing. It was less like bullying exactly. It's trauma. She was assaulted on the street, and I think she's using theater, her sort of scene study in theater class to process, and sort of she's using it cathartically to work through the trauma in her life. So, you know, it's just sort of expanding on that. It's like, what are other ways that the world is showing its teeth to teenagers in America right now? And so, yeah, other themes start to find their way in, and then other storylines, which were sort of broken bits from other feature ideas I had, sort of started to make it in, you know, so then it became this triple lead character narrative.
So was it, what was the decision like there as far as taking those bits from other ideas that you'd had and melding them together? Was this, just sort of the perfect inflection point for that? Or were there ideas that you wanted to put in that you just, that didn't make sense for this context and maybe you'll do for another feature?
Right. I think it was just sort of these were three stories that I wanted to tell, and they all seemed to sort of take place in a similar town, which I was just kind of placing in Peachtree City, Georgia, which is where I grew up. So it's what I know. And it made sense to say, you know what, well, these three people are living in the same town and they're going through these experiences. And what happens when you weave that together? Can we sort of conjure some other kind of chemistry by putting these stories in the same film?
Hmm. Now, Jim, you were the executive producer on Krista, the short film that we mentioned. Tell me about, and Danny, you can speak to this as well, but tell me about the process of taking that short film and making it into a feature. I've heard stories about filmmakers taking shorts and then using the cachet that they get from that, say on the festival circuit, and making a different movie. Mm-hmm. But this is sort of blowing out into the feature length version, exploring different possibilities of that film. What was that? How did that all happen?
I can provide some context there and also answer the first question a little bit. So Danny had done the Krista short and it had won two awards at South by Southwest. And it's really, really good. And then with all of the performers that are in that film, he had these ideas for other things that he wanted to talk about. But really what I remember is Danny saw The Shape of Water, the Guillermo del Toro movie, and he called me and was like, this guy just made like four movies in one. And like, he's like, he can do it. It's incredible. He doesn't care. It works really well. I think this can really work. And he had written the script for Beast Beast as a feature. He's like, I think this could work. And it did. And so in reading it and in hearing Danny talk about how these things were going to flow together, it just made sense. And all of these things kind of, I guess, not just were separate from each other. They all worked because they were about young people using the internet to upload videos of themselves and kind of do this like self-branding thing in three different ways and how they connect. And I just loved it. And it was like this funny clicking moment for Danny to be like, you know what, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to write it and then see if it works. And it did work.
Mm-hmm. And just for clarity's sake, it's not like I came out of Shape of Water going, that's the greatest film of all time. I came out saying, but I think what Jim was getting to is like, this is such specifically flavored film because it's like these three or four different things that this one person loves, like all mashed together. And then you get this like really unique film because of those, like the combination of different types of stories you haven't seen together before.
Definitely. So Jim, you're executive producer on this film, the feature, but Alec Baldwin is also listed in the credits. How did you guys get connected with him and what was his involvement? Did he help shepherd the movie?
So Danny had started the Kickstarter campaign to make the feature the night he won the two awards at South by Southwest for Krista, and we stayed up all night. Danny edited until like 9 a.m. getting this campaign ready to go live, which was insane. Wild wow. night. There's actually, if you watch the Kickstarter video, there's like a timer on the bottom of it of like what hour he was awake making this like video. It's really fun. But then just by word of mouth and by Krista blowing up as much as it did, one of the executives at Alex Company saw it and reached out to Danny and said, we're trying to do movies like this. We'd love to chaperone and help however we can. And they've been incredible. Danny can talk to Alex's involvement, but the dude and his team are just so cool. We had no business being with these people, but they came on to help out and they're just like our uncles now. It's really fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, Danny, tell me, did you get to work with Alec, or is it just kind of through his production company? I mean, yeah, either one is pretty awesome.
Yeah, but, so Casey Bader is his producing partner, and they were kind of starting this new thing together called Persona Entertainment, which is their new company, and Casey wanted to come down and be on set, and so he was boots on the ground helping us out, and Alec was sort of just supporting from afar. He would call with thoughts on the script, and then would call and give his ideas and thoughts on notes. But as he has said multiple times, he's like, I think the best job that I can do as an executive producer is provide whatever the director needs and then get out of his way. So that's kind of like, that's been his attitude. And he has stayed true to that, he's practicing what he preaches there.
And that never happens. We're very, very lucky.
Right. It was pretty nice. Pretty nice.
Can you tell me about some of those phone calls or those notes? Like, what was his input, like story related or more technical, kind of involving his career in front of him behind the camera?
Yeah, well, it was great. That's a good question, because he is an actor and like loves the craft of acting so much. And that is his life experience. So most of his notes were that. It was character stuff. It was, hey, what if this person tried this? Or one note that I really liked is he said, you know, all these acting classes, everything I've done over the years, people have that person they want to be, you know, this guy wants to be Brando, you know, this woman wants to be Meryl, you know, and he says, who is that for Krista? And he's like, think about that. He's like, I'd like to see some taste of that. So then I went over and I talked to Shirley Chen, the actress who played Krista, and we talked about her influences, and then we kind of looped the art department in. And then so that sort of helped how we filled out Krista's room and her locker, and you know, there's like little kind of fan drawings of like Kate Winslet in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, or Uma Thurman from Kill Bill, you know, like on her wall in the collage. So Alec just wanted those kinds of textures, you know. He approached everything from like an actor point of view, which is pretty exciting for me, and very much like he wants to stay in his lane in that way.
I want to ask you about that since you brought it up. There is a scene in Krista's bedroom where on that, I think it's on that collage, there looks to be a black and white autographed photo of an actress, or it looked like a Hollywood still. Who was that?
Yeah. So that's Dre Babinski. She's the front lady in a band called Steady Holiday. Okay. And she's a friend of ours, and we decided that Krista was a big fan of hers because there's a song playing, a Steady Holiday song in the movie. So we thought it'd be fun that like maybe she went to a concert once and got an autographed picture. So that's pretty funny that you picked up on that. That's like a fun little friend inside.
I didn't even catch that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So let's talk about casting. You know, mm-hmm. Shirley Chen, you know, is pretty amazing. And she was the star. She played Krista in Krista and Krista in Beast. So there's a great continuity there. How did you discover her? And also, my God, where did you discover Jose Angeles, who plays her kind of, you know, budding boyfriend in the film? Because both actors have this naturalism that is just phenomenal.
Right, right. No, and they're both fun stories. They're both good people. I consider them like close friends now, you know. So Shirley, our producer Kara Durrett on the short film Krista, had worked with this high school before, so we could get the location for free to go film the theater scene moments. And so we thought, hey, why don't we reach out to their drama department and see if any of the kids who actually go to that high school want to come out and audition for the movie. So we did that, and Will, my brother, who plays the teacher in the short, he plays Adam in Beast Beast. He just kind of coached a bunch of kids through these like improv exercises and group theater things. And we just watched, and then we did some improvisation stuff with Shirley, and she just like absolutely like blew us away. So we cast her in the lead of the short, and then just through that process, realized that she was like really on the level as far as what she's going for, how far she's willing to push herself, and you know, wants to like kind of get way down into the nitty gritty of things. And so we were like, yeah, this makes sense. We're going to keep working with Shirley. And there we go. So then I had full confidence when I wrote that part for her in the feature. And Jose Angeles is a Bay Area kid. He's born and raised South San Francisco. And we, Jim and I and Ben Wiesner, producer, lived in the Bay Area for a while. So some of my like post-production kind of pillars are still based in the Bay Area, Skywalker Sound, but also this company called Roast and Post in Oakland, which is run by Sean Wells. And he's been a friend for years, and he's the colorist on Beast Beast. And I was up there working on something with him, and he was doing a music video with Jose. And he said, you got to check out this kid's reel. So we you know, went on, you know, if you just like YouTube Jose Angeles, you know, trick reel or whatever, you'll see all these like incredible parkour, skateboarding, sign spinning, fun, just like clowning, kind of juggling, like really just amazing kind of like visual athlete. And I just was like, I have to meet this kid. So he came down, and like serendipitously, he has a brother in Los Angeles. He came down for a weekend, and we skateboarded around. We watched kung fu movies. And then we went and bothered Jim. And Jim, at this point, this is December 2017. So you're in post on Thunder Road, the feature. And we went and bothered you and took you out with a camera. And so Jim and Jose improvised some scenes together in this park, just, you know, like an old fashioned screen test, right? Like we like Jose. We want to see if he has any kind of acting chops. So we put them on screen together, and we had a lot of fun. We did some like silly scenes and then some more serious ones and some physical stuff. And then again, that instilled the confidence in me to write a part for him in when it came time to write Beast Beast a few months later.
So was Jose, I mean, he was a skateboarder and a physical, you know, performer, but did he have any designs on acting?
You know, sort of. I think he was starting to blossom into that. His mother was an actress back in the Philippines, and his dad worked in films and stuff back there too. So I think he always had that. It always felt like part of his like destiny, you know, that he wanted to like see what acting was about. And he had done some things in more of like a stunt show capacity, you know, like a Halloween stunt show at Universal Studios or something. He would do backflips and juggle things that are on fire. And but as far as like, you know, naturalistic performance, he hadn't really done anything like that before.
And were the, cause we do see a bit of that stunt work, cause he gets a bit of a reputation among, you know, some friends at school, for doing these outrageous stunts. Mm-hmm. Was that all pulled from Jose's YouTube reel, or did you shoot original stuff for the film? Cause I got to know about that escalator trick.
Oh, well, the escalator trick was from Jose's life for sure.
Okay.
yeah. Some of those were from Jose's life, but then a lot of it, we made either when he came down to Los Angeles or when we were out in Georgia, you know, we wanted that kind of authenticity. So I think cutting it in between existing footage helped just to kick off the beginning of the film with a montage that shows that, hey, these are real people.
Cool. Something you said sparked a sub question. So I'll get back to casting because I have one more question on casting in a second. But yep. Jim, I want to know, in a production like this, you know, it's an independent film, so producers I imagine can wear many different hats. What all did you do? How did you support Danny and the production throughout the film? And do we have enough time to talk about all the things that you did?
Yeah, sure.
And many different costumes as well, not just hats, but full costumes, right?
That's true. Yeah, they were gonna have a different actor play the police officer who arrests Jose, and then about a week out they were like, can you bring your cop uniform because we might need you to do this thing. So, I mean, I came down and helped out for about a week and a half of the production, and it was simple stuff. Like, I felt very helpful in, like, I was in charge of rounding up extras to be in the party scene. We had so few, mm-hmm. and I was like, all right, I'm just going to, like, tweet about it and see if anybody wants to come out and stay up all night and be in this mm-hmm. party scene and stuff. It was simple things like that. But then when you're on a set like this, it's always, you know, break down the C-stands. We got to get out of this location as quick as possible. It's like, it's 1,000 different things that happen. And then sometimes moral support for Danny. I've been to a couple of the test screenings of the movie before it reached its final cut, and just giving notes on small things of, and fielding questions of, like, any independent filmmaker of, am I crazy? Is this actually working? Danny and I have had that relationship for 15 years now of tag teaming and calling each other with those same questions. So I don't know. I mean, really with productions like this, it's however we can help. And you'd be surprised how many hats every member of the cast and crew wears on a film.
Right. Cool. Right.
Now, my last cast question on casting is Will, who I assume due to the surname is your brother, Danny. I don't know how old any of you guys are. is he your younger brother, older brother? What's the deal there?
Right. He's younger by 4 years.
Okay.
Which I think, like, de facto makes him the actor. When we're growing up and I'm starting to make movies, it's like, hey, we need someone to, like, you know, ride his bike into the river here. Hey, Will, you want to be in a movie? You know, so he kind of fell into that in, like, in a Stockholm syndrome kind of way. He was like, all right, I'll be an actor. And then he just, like, really thrived in it. He has such a natural talent and was always, like, really comfortable in front of a camera. And by the time high school came around, he was, like, kind of starring in the high school plays and stuff like that. And so he's excellent, you know, and then he went and trained and did theater professionally in Boston for a few years before, you know, Jim and I and our other friends managed to sort of coax him out to the West Coast to be in movies again. back to the authenticity thing of just having, like, Shirley is a teenage theater kid. Jose is, you know, this, like, amazing little ball of energy kind of performer. Will is very much not a gun guy. So in order to get that texture, that layering of sort of authenticity in him, he worked so hard. I would say he had the tallest order, but, like, you know, everyone had, I asked a lot of every actor, and I think, but Will really had to, like, become somebody different for this role. And so we all went back to Georgia about 5 weeks before we started shooting, and we were staying, you know, the brick house in the movie is our childhood home. That's Whoa. Mom and dad's house. That is the room where Will's character lives is my childhood bedroom. So we went back there and Will just started going to the firing ranges and stuff and started making friends with people, picked up a couple folks to help, like, train him. And so he got just so fluent in firearms, how to kind of, he was doing these drills, he was hitting the targets, and he was just, like, he got really great at it. And he knew that was, like, such an important basis for his character. But also all the conversations with these guys who kind of are these, like, firearm hobbyists, you know, becoming, like, buds with them. And Will was really able to kind of, like, step inside of their mindset and see the world from that angle. So he and Will is, like, one of the hardest working people. And Jim can attest to this. It's like when you cast Will, it's like hiring a co-writer, you know, like with everything he brings to it.
It's insane. Yeah. So, like, just nerding out and seeing how Will works, he has pages and pages of notes in these, like, spiral notebooks of what the experience is like to be this actor. Like, it's insane to look at these things. I asked Will to play a serial killer in my film, The Wolf of Snow Hollow, and the amount of research that he did was, like, more than mine, which is insulting at times.
Right.
But, like, it's insane. When he gets cast in something, the dude is like, how do I become this thing that I'm being asked to become? It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, fully immersed, and I'm sure he's on some government lists with his, like, internet searches with all his characters.
Well, that's something I wanted to get to. In a lot of ways, this movie reminded me of Joel Schumacher's Elephant from 2003, which was
Gus Van Sant.
Oh, it was Gus Van Sant. Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. I got them mixed up.
I'd love to see that version, though.
I don't know if I would. It'd probably be a lot of, like, the most neon high school you've ever been to. Gus Van Sant. Yeah, so Elephant, 2003. Very good. I'm with my film guys. This is great. But
right.
You know, in that film, which was very much trying to capture this idea of a realistic high school that has a tragedy happen to it involving gun violence. The shooters were pretty much portrayed as, you know, they play too many violent video games. They watch a lot of, you know, they're gun obsessives. The thing about Beast Beast is there is a lot of nuance in both the, you know, the gun obsessed 24-year-old and also in the high school kids, and they both kind of intersect in a way that I don't want to spoil. Although I do want to know briefly how your parents reacted to what happens in that house. Did you build any kind of set for that, or did they're just like, ah, we'll pay for it, it's in the budget? But before we get to that, just, you know, that authenticity, that nuance in the discussion of not painting particular people as only one thing. Was that in the original script? Did any of that come out of Will getting into this sort of gun culture and interacting with gun enthusiasts?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. We weren't interested in showing anyone as a villain. That's like where we started from. That's not what we were going for with this movie. When you talk about elephant and sometimes the language that people use when they're talking about this movie, I think kind of bends it in a way that it's not, that it doesn't quite go, because this is not a mass shooter. This is not a school shooter. This is an extremely different scenario than any of that stuff. You know, this is not a guy who's like going out to like end his life and take as many people as he can with him. This is some people watch this movie and think he's in the right, you know, like a lot of people think he's in the right in this. And I think that is the thing that I wanted to examine with this, because you see these, you know, on local news stations, you see these kinds of events happen with like terrifying frequency in the United States. And then you read like interviews with the neighbors where they say, well, they shouldn't have gone in there. You know, that's their property. Like that's, you know, and the idea of like punishable by death for something like that is, it just feels so Wild Westy to me. And all, obviously in the age of like internet comments and stuff, it's like overwhelmingly in support of the shooter almost always. And I just wanted to ask some questions about that. I wanted to examine that. I think that's a very interesting place to be as a like quote most advanced society on the planet, you know?
Sure. And you know, talking about that that internet culture, couple of things there. One, what kind of research did you and, you know, perhaps Will have to do in terms of getting it? I can speak to this as a YouTuber. The frustration and the awkwardness of trying to record an introduction and doing multiple takes, you know, kind of scanning your likes and your video counts, the sweat and the frustration, you know, did that come from research? Is that something you've had personal experience with? And is that any of that related to you as a filmmaker, as a team of artists who are trying to make art in a mass media landscape that's just crowded?
Yeah, that's great. I've definitely described this movie before, these characters, as like the three different parts of my brain. There's like the theater kid, there's the skater kid, and then there's the filmmaker. So that's definitely like how I've divided it, like, you know, retrospectively looking at it. Yes, definitely. We've all felt that this idea of the blessings of social media that, like, you know, as Jim has been using so well for years, like this idea of like direct outreach to people, the Twitters and the, you know, whatever, the YouTubes and Instagrams and all that. And you can have this direct access to people, which is so nice. But then it becomes like, you can, you know, like anything, you can become addicted to it, and it can be destructive, and you can be obsessed with the approval of being getting the approval of strangers, you know, and I think that can lead to really dangerous things. And in this guy's case, he happened to also have an extremely destructive hobby that goes into that, you know?
Yeah. So Jim, tell me about the house.
Yeah, well, Danny's parents have been pretty used to their house getting screwed up for Danny's movies for the last three decades. I think the big action scene that takes place in there, you know, it was tag teaming between like, how do you actually do it? How, like, do you use squibs? Do we use like slingshots? We use squibs. But yeah, it looks really much more destructive than it actually was. I mean, like the, you know, it's a lot of movie magic, but that's the fun stuff, you know, like you take over a kitchen and you have fun with it for a couple of hours.
Yeah. And it was also like, you get that middle school feeling of like asking your mom, like, hey, can I go like sleep over at my friend's house? And she's like, I don't know. You better ask your dad. And then you go over to your dad and you're like, hey, can I go? And he's like, yeah, I don't know if your mother's going to let you. It was exactly that situation when it came to like, oh, there's some pyrotechnics that are going to happen. Like, you're cool with that, right? And mom's like, I don't know. You know how your dad is. And then I went to dad and I was like, yeah, that's the pyrotechnics. And he's like, you're never going to convince your mother to do that. So, and then it worked out.
Well, two last questions before we go. Mm-hmm. I saw on social media yesterday that there was an announcement about the beta test, which is going to be at Tribeca. And then, Jim, you also mentioned that you've got, there's a film that you mentioned that you were working on, a new project. Is that right?
I went away for a writer's retreat to write something that I'm kind of partially through with my buddies PJ and Dustin. But yeah, the beta test is screening in Tribeca on June 11th. And so I think I'm going to fly out and get my second dose of Moderna tomorrow, and hopefully they'll let me into the state. But yeah, it's crazy. We're very lucky. I'm actually doing the like sound sync right now in the garage. So it's like still a lot of like small granular filmmaking that's happening, even though it's done and accepted to festivals.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. My last question is random. Daniel Rashid co-stars in Beast as Nito's friend Yanni. And there's a scene where their friends get together and they do a toast with Hot Pockets. Now, Daniel was also in a movie a couple of years ago called Being Frank, which starred Jim Gaffigan, who is the Hot Pockets guy. Coincidence?
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that.
That is new information in my life, for sure.
Was Daniel the one who suggested the Hot Pockets? Could that be a thing?
Definitely not. Okay. Definitely not. The Hot Pockets were in there. But he definitely ran with it. That's really funny. I didn't know Jim Gaffigan is the Hot Pockets guy.
That is a deep cut. That is wild.
Yeah, that's really fun. I wonder if, because I know Daniel's like buds with Jim from doing that movie together. I wonder if that connection has been made between them. But I'll definitely bring it up to him. I think he'll get a kick out of that if he hasn't put two and two together yet.
Well, I can also recommend go on YouTube, not to look up gun stuff, but to look up Jim Gaffigan Hot Pockets. It's a great routine. But
okay. Oh, right. his stand up thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. Where he's doing the instructions and stuff, the directions. Yes, I remember that. That's a fun little world coincidence overlap.
Excellent. Well, Danny Madden, Jim Cummings, thank you so much for taking some time to talk about Beast with me. This is a much different film than I thought it was going to be. Even just sitting down watching the first 10 minutes, I thought I was going in a particular direction, but it went all sorts of crazy creative places. And I think everyone should check it out on demand now, which they can do. So thanks a lot. Let's keep in touch. I want to know about your future projects and congratulations on getting this far.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much.
Pleasure.
All right. Take it easy, guys.
Take it easy.
Bye.
Bye.